Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Atheist Human. My name is Perry, and I just want to tell you a little bit about what I am and what we do. I feel that no atheist should be afraid to say I am an atheist. I talk to atheists all over the world that have a difficult time coming out as an atheist. Some will be murdered if they do. Others will be shunned or disowned by their families. Even in the USA, it is illegal for some states for atheists to hold office. I think this is a crime. We need to stick together and we need to help others like ourselves to embrace their atheism. We ask atheists to tell their personal stories of how they came to atheism and how they deal with the blowback of trying to be open about their atheism. Our stories can help others make that leap to unfaith. And my guest is Michael McDonald. Also, he wrote a book called Diary of a Gay Nerd. And I think his story is compelling, and that's why I asked him if he'd be on. Hi, Mike.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Where do you want to start, buddy?
Do you have any questions?
I got lots of questions. But start off when how you came to atheism, how you grew up. You know about the. I thought a lot of that was very interesting about how you weren't sure if you were what church you were baptized in or if it was a Mormon church, right?
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but I'm pretty sure I was baptized in the Mormon church. I think I had the word baptized and Baptist confused. I know that my mom said something about the Baptist church, but she also mentioned that when I was a baby, she was a Mormon, so it only stands to reason that I was baptized a Mormon.
Okay. How'd that go?
But, there's a story I'm not supposed to tell because of my stepfather's last name. But in the book, I renamed him George, but his real name is Ron. And my last name is McDonald. And, well, you know, I'm sure you can figure that out. He was with my mom in church, and they asked him to stand up and say his name, and he proudly got up and said, "My name is Ronald McDonald." And the reason he did that is because they were afraid that the church would kick them out or kick her out, my mom out, because she was living with this guy and they weren't married. So, you know, he just wanted to help her not get kicked out, and he just didn't think it through. That was the last time my stepfather wanted to go to church, and he hasn't gone to church since. But when I was a teenager, actually preteen, I wanted to go to church because I found this humongous Bible in the garbage, and I took it out, and I had an interest. I was wondering what this whole thing was about. So one of my neighbors was going to the Salvation Army Church. I was about 12, and they invited me to go to church with them. And I went to church with them for, I think, a year and a half, maybe a year and a half. And I was completely, I was, instead of allowing me to sit with the other kids in Sunday school, they put me in a little broom closet with a woman who had us both reading the Bible to ourselves, some music. And I'm just thinking, what? How is this, you know, how is this a good Sunday school for a kid?
So you were excluded.
I was secluded from the other kids or excluded or whatever. Because they knew I was gay before I knew I was gay when I was like 5 or 6, but I didn't think that I put off a gay vibe at 12, and they just didn't want me around the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when how I came to atheism was the feeling of being excluded from when I was 12. I was in the Salvation Army homeless shelter when I was 17, and I came out of the closet to one of the volunteers who just so happened to be a lesbian, and she said, do not tell anyone that you're gay, because if you do, the Salvation Army will kick you out of the homeless shelter program, and you won't be able to come back. And so I'm thinking, they're going to kick out a person who's already homeless and make them, you know, more homeless by kicking me out of the shelter because of my sexuality. I mean, that just didn't make sense. And for the next couple of years after that, I was told how I was going to hell, and by my sister and by my first boyfriend's mother and just everyone. And it started to occur to me that why would God create me to be gay? I'm sure that he created me to be gay if there was a God. But why would he create me to be gay, or she, and then just, you know, shun me? It just didn't make sense to me. So I started thinking about this whole heaven and hell thing, and it occurred to me that the church had to have created the idea of hell as a tool to threaten people. Do things our way, or you're going to go to a bad place. And that's when it started, you know, clicking in my head that this whole thing is just fake, you know? I can't believe in something that, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. And people can say that, you know, it makes sense to them, fine, but it doesn't make sense to me.
And after all, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care what other people believe in. You can believe in and a dog as God, you know, the opposite spelling. I don't care. Flying spaghetti monster, whatever. But don't expect me to pray to a spaghetti. I mean, the whole spaghetti monster thing is a joke, and I call myself a pastafarian because I know it's just a joke. But, you know, I'm not going to go and get my driver's license with a spaghetti strainer on my head. You know, I just think that that whole thing is silly. And if somebody gets that approved, good for you. But I'm not going to do it, you know.
I totally get it. People can believe what they want to believe as long as they don't push it off on other people.
Yeah, and I was visiting my partner's family. We were visiting his family, and his niece, bless her heart, she just found out that, or well, she didn't find out. She was in a coma. She has brain cancer, but a couple of years ago, she kept asking me, why don't you go to church? Maybe you should start going to church. And I'm thinking, God, why do I have to go to church? And, you know, I shut down. When people start this telling me what I should do, my brain just shuts down, and I put up a wall, and I say, you're done. You know, I don't want to hear it.
I got it.
If you want to go to church...
Mike, we got a caller calling in. Do you want to take it or do you want to wait a while?
Sure.
Hang on, okay?
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Hey, hello. How's it going?
Yes. All right, who's this?
This is Taylor Walters.
Hey, Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing good. Just got home from college.
So you want to ask Mike something or...
I was just messaging through Atheist Human on Twitter, and they just told me to call this number, said they'd like to interview me and hear about my story of converting from Mormon to atheism.
That's at a different time when we have a show. We're having a show right now, and you're calling in. And I meant for you to listen to it.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. And if you had any questions, just, you know, bring them on forth. But
okay.
Our guest started off at Mormonism, too.
Okay, yeah, sweet. That's awesome.
I was baptized. I believe I was baptized Mormon. But my parents also, when I was about 14 years old, about 13 years old, they went back to the Mormon church. I mean, my stepfather didn't go to church, but they joined the Mormon church again, but basically because we were starving and they needed their food bank. And so I became a Mormon again for about 6 months until they caught my sister smoking. Then they kicked our whole family out.
Jeez.
So I was a Mormon again for a brief period.
Do you want to listen, Taylor?
I guess I may as well. I just got sent this number by Twitter like just now, so I assumed that meant call. So I guess if you want me to listen, I'm not doing anything at the moment.
That's up to you. That's up to you, Taylor. Thanks for calling
okay.
in, bud.
Anytime. Let me know when you'd like me to call.
Not a problem.
All right. See ya.
There's actually a Mormon family in they were living in Bakersfield where I live. They moved to Arizona, but their son came out of their closet. There's actually a movie. I'll have to look it up. They did like a 15-minute documentary about how their kid came out of the closet and their church just like shunned the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, you know, that's another thing is that, you know, why is it they were pushing this whole pro-gay thing and then all of a sudden they just took it back. And I just don't understand why a church like that, you know, would say, okay, you can come to our church, and then they would say, okay, stay away. I start to wonder how many more Mormons, or gay Mormons, for example, have become atheists because of the way the Mormons treat them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why would they still want to continue going to the Mormon church knowing how their church feels? Because some people, they continue going or they go to another Mormon church. My partner is a Christian and we've been together for about 22 years. And
mm-hmm.
he goes to a church on our block in our neighborhood. And they told him, you know, we don't care that you're gay, but you just can't have sex anymore. And I'm thinking, okay, you know what? That's just BS.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
It's really stupid. And it makes me, I know that they're not Catholic, but it makes me think of the priests. You know, the priests are doing what they're doing to children, but the gay members of the church aren't allowed to have sex with each other. You know,
yeah.
I just don't get the hypocrisy.
It's just typical of religiosity. They want to regulate what other people do to fit their worldview. And, you know, that's fine if they don't want to have sex. That's okay, you know. But when they start telling you or me or somebody else that we shouldn't be doing what we're doing, we shouldn't love who we love, you know, that's just going way too far and very intrusive. very intrusive. And I bet it's a double whammy for you because you're a gay atheist.
Yeah. Well,
in Mormon country, yeah.
Well, I mean, well, I'm not in Mormon country, but...
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah. But this family that I was talking about, they moved to Arizona because their church basically told even the straight parents and the straight children, they only have one gay kid, and the rest of the kids are, I assume, straight. They shunned the whole family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The gay kid stopped going to church because they made him feel unwelcome. But the rest of the family continued going because, especially the mother, because she wanted to be there for the other gay children that were still in the closet, but she knew that they were gay. She wanted to still be there for them. So, and her son understood what was going on, and he didn't care. But I just personally be offended that my family was still going to the same church that shunned me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's me, and you know, this whole family, they're just the most wonderful family you've ever seen, and they're always so happy, and they're always smiling, and you know, I would never say a bad thing about any of them because they're just so nice. They're too nice. But I just, I wouldn't want to have to be in their shoes, having to continue going to a church that's, you know, shunning you. And that's why they moved to Arizona, because apparently where they moved, there's like a humongous community of gay Mormons and gay Mormon children. And... you know, they just wanted to be a part of a bigger community that accepts them. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sad that they moved, but, you know, I get why they moved.
Sure.
And I would probably do the same thing if I had to go to a different community different states, just to be around, you know, people that accepted me. I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah, and I understand that too. I think that's innate in all of us that wanting to be part of something and part of something bigger than just our little ourselves. I mean, we have a need for socialization.
And the need to be accepted.
One of the sociologists that I like to read a lot of talks about us being the social ape. You know, that need for socialization to be part of something and community is what has allowed us to perpetuate. You know, and that shunning is an ancient ritual. And it's terrible, you know, and even, you know, I don't know anywhere in Christianity where the sins of the father are visited on the son and vice versa, supposedly, okay?
Yeah.
Except for with the crucifixion of Jesus. I think that individual responsibility is very important, and that's another thing that the church takes away, is responsibility. You know, and they make exceptions for when it's convenient for them,
and they cherry pick.
That's what I'm talking about.
A whole bunch of, yeah.
You know, they pick what they want, and they don't. There are some that just follow everything by the letter. They're dangerous. You know, they still believe in the things that are in there. They think people should be stoned. And I'm talking about just Sharia. I'm talking about Christianity, you know.
Yeah.
And there are some running for political office that feel that way.
Oh, yeah.
They think that public humiliation should be brought back for unwed stuff.
And Donald Trump wants to put all Muslims on a list or register, have them all register. That sounds familiar.
It's very familiar. And then where does that stop? What about the next issue or X group? You know?
Yeah.
Very slippery slope and very hateful.
Well, the whole cherry-picking thing, you have a homophobe, and he says, well, Leviticus, blah, 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 says blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, this person has tattoos, and they're eating shellfish and ham.
Yeah. Well, the Bible also says that a woman that's raped must marry her rapist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that the children whole... and that children are property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, just a lot of things that are inherent in the fundamentalist movements now are straight out of that horror book. See, I think the first mistake you made was taking that Bible out of the garbage.
Yeah, it was heavy too. it was. I should have just left it there. But you know, I was curious, and curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah. Well, curiosity is good. That's what brought you to where you are.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it was a good experiment. Well, not experiment, but it was a good to be able to find out exactly who wants me and who doesn't want me. Because by being shunned from the Sunday school, that told me right there that they don't want me there.
Right.
They could have said, you can't come to our church anymore because we know that you're different and we don't like different because different scares us. But instead of saying that, they accepted me as a human being in a closet.
Literally.
And they literally put me in the closet. I mean, it wasn't a real closet, but you know,
I'm sorry that happened to you.
I'm glad that it happened because it taught me a huge lesson. And the same thing with the Salvation Army homeless shelter. The volunteer that I came out to, she was a lesbian, and her partner volunteered once a week at the actual Salvation Army because they had us sleeping in different churches every night. So when I was at that one particular homeless shelter at the Salvation Army church, I felt comfortable telling her, even though she was constantly calling me a derelict and she was constantly putting me down. I just, for some reason, I had this feeling that she, of all the people, of all the volunteers, she is the one that I should tell.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, that she's a lesbian. But
worked
she told
out well.
They told the church that they were sisters. So the church accepted them. Because, you know, back then, this was in 1987 or 1988. Back then, you know, if they see two women that are living together and they say we're sisters, they take them out at face value.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of looked alike. One actually looked like the one that I told, she actually looked and had the personality of Jane Lynch. And she wasn't Jane Lynch, but she reminded me, when I saw Jane Lynch on TV, I thought, that is the woman. That's the woman right there. And it just cracked me up that she had the same personality as the woman from the Salvation Army. But they said, they told me, meet us in the park tomorrow at 12 or whatever, and we'll talk to you about it. And they told me, you know, don't mention anything to the Salvation Army Church about being gay, because they will kick you out. And, you know, that's another control thing.
Sure it is.
I know that they were doing it for my own benefit, but at the same time, I still felt like I was being shunned again.
Well,
even though
they were actually
helping me, but it kind of, you know, it
those
really hurt
two
my
people,
feelings.
Well, those two people were just delivering information to you.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't blame them.
Shunning you. No.
Yeah.
I have no
issue with them. I think they were wonderful women who, you know, they were volunteering their time every week, and they were actually, they'd actually spend the night in the church with the homeless people. And, you know, it was very nice of them, but, you know, it still made me feel bad. And the church did help me find a place to live after, because that shelter program only lasted for like maybe 9 months. And on May 1st, they kicked everyone out. And they opened the shelter back up in, I think, October.
Mm-hmm.
And so I only had a limited amount of time left, and I looked at the ads, and I found a room for rent for $50 a month, and they gave me the $50, and, you know, so I do appreciate everything that they did for me, but as a person today, you know, I wouldn't donate money to them, even for their homeless shelter, because of the way they treat gay people.
They didn't do that for you. I hate to say this to you, but they didn't. They did it for somebody who they thought you were.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't do it for you.
Yeah.
I spent my time in the Salvation Army, too, for other reasons. Because I'm a recovered alcoholic and addict. I got 28 years. But I was homeless, just like you're talking about.
Yeah.
And if they knew, you know, my religious persuasion, let's say, they would have done the same thing to me.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why I call it coming out of the closet for atheists, too, because what you're describing, and like I said, you got a double whammy in a way, is that, you know, we're judged just like being gay is. And,
yeah.
You know, and people are fearful of going through what you went through. But you survived.
Yeah.
Not only did you survive, you came out on the other side better off.
Yeah. Well, after the homeless shelter, I lived in that. It was a Vietnam family's house. My family found me, and I moved in with my sister, and I basically slept on couches for the next few years. And then I was sleeping or living in motels, and so I really was homeless for many, many years. And I spent a lot of years eating nothing but potatoes and rice, because I had a job, but I just didn't have the money for food, because the motel was, you know, taking up all of the money that I was earning. And so I don't consider a motel a home. And even though I had a bed and a roof over my head,
I agree.
Yeah. So it wasn't until I met my partner. Before I met my partner, I was living in an apartment. But I got sick with pneumonia, and I lost my job, and the owner of the building was threatening to kick me out because I didn't have the money for rent, and I had pneumocystis pneumonia. I was diagnosed with HIV in 1991, and when I had the pneumocystis pneumonia, that apparently was an upgrade, and they didn't tell me right away that I had AIDS. And I think this was in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
That year, I think like maybe a couple months later, I met my partner, and we've been together for 22 years. So this is the first real home I've ever had since my parents kicked me out.
I'm glad for you, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, got another call, and you want to check it out?
Sure.
Let's see how this one goes. Hello, caller.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
All right, how are you?
Doing great. Just had a question for you guys, something to think about, and something I've kind of observed is that, and you can maybe elaborate from both your perspectives how you feel about the point. I seem to notice that a lot of people, especially recently, when they become atheists, it seems to be more towards, say, like, for example, someone was a Christian, became an atheist because they had some type of negative experience in their life that made them feel like either God wasn't real or he wasn't there to help them. And then they almost become atheists out of an emotional response to some type of negative event in their lives. Seems to be that more so than, say, the study of scientific evidence to make them maybe change their view. I don't know if you guys noticed that as well.
Yeah. I'll take this one real quick, if you don't mind, Mike.
Sure, please.
I think it's more the other way around. I think there's more people that become born again because they have an emotional response to a situation or something that has happened to them in their lives, and they're desperate. Most atheists I know became atheists over time. It was a learned experience, and if I'm wrong with you, Mike, tell me.
No.
I think that it was a number of different things in our lives, and then we had this weird thing called education. And education taught us things that were just not cohesive with the Bible, not in the same ballpark. And then we start questioning that and finding that if you really read the Bible, you'll find all the negativity and hate and genocide and incest and other things that are part of it that we don't like. And because there's absolutely no evidence that there's a God, there's no scientific evidence that there's anything supernatural. The atheists that I speak to all over the world tell me pretty much the same thing. Most of their conclusions come over time, out of personal experience, but more importantly, out of scientific evidence. And there's just no supporting that there is any kind of thing supernatural. Did I answer your question?
To a degree, and the reason I would disagree with that, to a sense, that I'd say this, is that most atheists you engage in this initial discussion about the issue, what I've noticed is they often come out with an intellectual position as their first step to try to make it seem, because you have to also distinguish what I believe atheism and, let's say,
there's no
religion
trying
or Christianity.
To make anything. Hey, I'm not here to debate, okay? This isn't a debate show. This is a debate atheism over theism. So I think you've got the wrong show. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No. I mean, everybody's got a question about how you know, somebody becomes atheist or how somebody becomes Christian.
When you have shows like this, you start to pick out the trolls, okay?
Yeah.
You follow me? There's certain questions they ask, and the way that they ask them, they're trying to prove a point that atheists are wrong. And so they want a debate. Don't do that. There's a lot of other shows that do that. What I do is help support other atheists and tell them their story and come out as an atheist. You know, they can call somebody else and debate with them. I'm more than capable and willing to do that, but that's not my purpose.
Yeah.
Is that cool? All right.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it took me many years. You know, I the whole questioning began when I was 12. And when I was basically shunned in the closet, and when I was in my early 20s is when I finally came to the conclusion, when I made my decision that it just wasn't, religion just wasn't for me because I just didn't believe in it. I have a lot of questions about it. You know, Adam and Eve had how many kids? Three, and they were all sons. Who did they have sex with?
No kidding. Well, the whole story of Genesis isn't even the original story.
Yeah. I just wonder if there was only two people and they had kids, who did they have sex with to have more kids?
That's right.
I mean, the whole evolution thing with, you know, the fish that grew legs and started walking on the land walking on land and, you know, all the evolution makes more sense to me.
Sure it does.
Because
there's evidence of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's tons of evidence over many different sciences that all corroborate the same thing. And so, you know, it's not just a whim or a theory, it's a fact. I'm done.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's one of my soapboxes of many.
I watch a lot of, I don't watch as much as I used to, but I used to watch a lot of Discovery Channel before it all became reality shows.
Right.
And you know, there was a lot of discussion about evolution and how life began on Earth, and none of it had pointed anywhere towards the Bible or religion or whatever. And people are so misinformed. And I'm not saying that I'm the smartest person in the world. I barely even read any of the Bible. So I read the New Testament, not all of it, but I read quite a few chapters. God, I lost my train of thought. I forgot where I was going with this. I'm not a complete expert, but, you know, nobody's an expert on
right.
evolution of the Bible. You know, and if they are, then they should probably have a show, I guess. I don't know.
Well, there are some experts. There really are. Richard Dawkins is an expert. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
He has, you know, a lot of knowledge about a lot of different things, but he's the actual degrees. I mean, you know. If you listen to him or you listen to like Cosmos, okay, mm-hmm. Cosmos has a real good series on the evolution of everything, you know?
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is it's important to stay informed and that helps shape your change of thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it doesn't help that most of my information comes from ancient aliens.
no.
I'm just kidding. I've only seen a couple of those.
So, yeah. How did you, I mean, so you evolved your atheism over time?
Yeah. I mean, it took me a long time, and I remember when I was 16, I was working at McDonald's, my first job, and I was still on the, I kind of felt like I was more born again at that point for some reason. I don't know why. A guy came in and said he wanted like 6 Big Macs. And I said, is this for here to go? And he says, Jesus Christ, what do you think? I'm going to eat it all here by myself? And I was like, okay. So I went to the manager and I said, this customer just used the Lord's name in vain. Can you please take his money and I'll get the food? And so he gave the guy his food and took the money, and he says, never come back here. And,
wow.
You know, kind of, I was still in the whole, you know, born again thing at that point, but it still took me, I was still on the fence, you know.
Right.
But it took me a few more years before I, you know, changed.
Yeah, I find that, you know, apologetics like the gentleman that called us,
mm-hmm.
Try to minimize a move to atheism as an emotional response to a bad situation. You know, that if you were only treated right and only treated differently, that you wouldn't be an atheist. I mean, it's just like being gay, I imagine. If you were, you know, if you would only, you know, learn something different or change your mind, you wouldn't be gay anymore.
Yeah.
And the only difference is that you're born that way. And that's that there is scientific evidence of that, genetic evidence. That
yeah.
Gay people are born gay. You know,
well,
not
you know,
a choice. Big difference.
There are churches out there like the Episcopal Church that fully accepts gay people. And
mm-hmm.
and if you know if this whole thing happened to me right now, and then I found out that there was with the Salvation Army, and then I found out that there was the Episcopal Church and they were accepting, and I would just switch churches.
Right.
And that would just be no big deal to me. But that's not what happened. And, you know, it took a lot of reading and education to come to the conclusion that I finally came to. And things just did not make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was – and also listening to other atheists like Ricky Gervais, for example, talking on his
yes.
stand-up. I mean, he – you know, I mean, it's something listening to him talk about how really silly some of the things are. It just makes you think. So, and I haven't really listened to Richard Dawkins that much. I really don't know that much about him. I just know that I saw him on South Park. And did you see that episode?
Yeah.
Mrs. Garrison with the wonky breasts.
Yes.
That was pretty funny. But, I mean, that's really the only thing I can refer to Richard Dawkins. I really don't – I follow him on Twitter, but I really don't look at Twitter too often. I have no education about Richard Dawkins. I've seen a couple of tweets where he says something and people just lose their crap and they just go off on him. And I just think, why are people that, you know, this whole planet in this whole universe, we're basically the planet in the whole scheme of things is like a tiny grain of sand. And we're just little
microscopic.
Yeah, we're just little tiny microscopic creatures, just, you know, like crawling on this little grain of sand. Who cares? Life's too short. You know, some people only have 60 years.
Richard Dawkins is bold. Go to YouTube and pull it up and watch some of his stuff. And Christopher Hitchens, okay? It'll amaze you.
Yeah.
Those people
I just think people are, like the Westboro Baptist Church, for example, they spend so much time with their signs hating gay people. What for? I mean, get a life. You know,
they're robots.
Just don't understand how people can just spend their whole lives hating somebody that they don't even know.
Well, yeah, I know. there are evolutionary reasons for that too, and you know, we all think we're in control, and we all think that we, you know, have in our personal evolution come to where we're at on our own. The truth of the matter is that, you know, the biochemically, there are a lot of predispositions in the way we tend to think, because thoughts are just electrical impulses and chemicals, just like feelings. And some of those chemicals are already preordained in you and in them, and leads to different, under the right environmental circumstances, make it prone to think one way or the other. And they've already shown that there's a difference in believers' brains and non-believers' brains, and Republicans' brains and Democrats' brains. Under the right conditions, genetically, you know, we're predisposed to believe in a particular way. So in the strictest of sense, we're all robots to some degree or another. People don't like to think about it like that, but, you know, we are at the mercy of our chemicals. I mean,
I understand that, and I'm probably more of a robot because I spend so much time playing a robot in Destiny on PlayStation. it's not a problem for me, but I'm sure. And I see these talk shows like Jerry Springer. Women are upset because their boyfriends are on the video game so long. I'm on it all the time. My partner doesn't care. And you know, like you were saying about Republicans and Christians and atheists, and I'm sure that everybody is set in their ways, and nothing is going to change them. Like, all Republicans don't want to vote for Democrats. All Democrats don't want to vote for Republicans. You know, it's basically, you're going to do what you're going to do. Nobody's going to change it.
Well, my view on that is that you're right. There are the extremes and those in between, and the extremes are not going to change. There's people that will never change their mind.
Yeah.
And one way or the other, no matter what you do, they're never going to change their mind. And there are other people that are the same way on the other side. But there are some in the middle. There are some in the middle, okay?
Yeah.
That's the ones that we try to reach, okay?
Yeah.
Is those ones in the middle, sitting on the fence, not quite sure. I talked to a kid today in the Philippines who's there, you know? And he's kind of afraid to make that leap, but he's one of the ones that's not afraid to change his mind.
Yeah.
He's just skeptical about it right now.
Yeah.
You know, those people can be touched.
Yeah. Well, because they want all the facts before they make a decision.
Right.
And I respect that because I'm like that sometimes.
And they see the facts as facts.
Yeah. But sometimes, like with these attack ads, sometimes the facts are not the facts. And, you know, politicians lie.
Yeah, well,
so,
of course.
And so, you know, I don't look at attack ads. I look at the records of the politician that I'm voting for. And I look at their past. Somebody might have been for gay marriage, and then they all of a sudden they're running for president, and they the popular thing is to be against gay marriage, so they all of a sudden they're against gay marriage. But when they become president, all of a sudden they're for marriage again, and or they're against marriage. You know, they were for it, and then they become president, so they're against it.
They change.
It's all about getting that vote. Going to be for gay marriage to the anti-gay people, and you promise I'm for gay marriage to the pro-gay people, but who knows what's going to really happen when they're actually in office. And you can't really trust anything that they're saying.
Well, you got to look at the record, and especially with Donald Trump. He's already said he's playing a game. Get into all that, I got a little less than 8 minutes left. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your book, okay?
Yeah.
Diary of a Gay Nerd, Life After Child Abuse, That's Better. It's on Kindle, right? And Amazon?
Yeah, it's on the Kindle. Yeah, and on Amazon, and it's in paperback.
Okay.
The reason I wrote it, I wanted to write that book for 20 years. I started writing it on an Apple IIe in 1990, and they stopped selling the software for it. It got discontinued, so I sold it and lost all the work that I did, which wasn't very much. But I was told in 2010 that I basically had about 10 more years. So it was it was a bucket list. I wanted to write it. I'm sure that doctor was wrong. I wanted to write it because I wanted to get it, you know, I wanted to finally do it. I've wanted to write my whole life. And I finally decided I'm just going to start writing. And I know I don't have any training. I didn't go to school for it. I just started writing like I was talking to somebody, like I was telling somebody a story. And that's how I wrote it. And a lot of the emotions that I wrote, I wrote with the emotions of the memory. I don't feel that way towards those people that I wrote about. I wanted to use the emotions from the memory. So if I said that I hated someone, like my stepfather, that's the way I felt in that particular memory. You know, I've forgiven everyone for everything that was ever done to me because, you know, I forgave them for me so that I would have peace, not for them. But mainly I wanted to write about my experiences as a homeless person. And in order for me to do that, I had to start from somewhere. So I started from the beginning and the whole, you know, I was abused as a child by my stepfather. My sister joined in on the act, and she was very abusive to me. And so that's why where the title Life After Child Abuse comes in, because, you know, I'm not a child anymore, and I'm not being abused. But and also the It Gets Better part was because it does get better, not just for the child abuse part, but also because of the gay part, because I was bullied in school and I attempted suicide several times, starting when I was about 13 years old. And You know, I just wanted to say it gets better because you have to make it better for yourself. You have to think differently. You can't just say it gets better and move on. It's all in your mind. You have to make it better for yourself. But the book ends basically, when I meet my partner, and I think there's two chapters saying, you know, we have a good relationship. There's no abuse,
right.
And you know, we're happy, and it did get better for me. And you know, after I wrote it, I have a Facebook page for it, and somebody said it doesn't get better, and you know. It doesn't get better if you don't want it to get better. You have to let it get better. So, you know, it's a personal issue. I have a cousin who was abused, and it didn't get better for her because, you know, she's just an angry person, and I use humor for myself to make things better for me. And I'm constantly turning horrible things into a joke because, you know, everything that's horrible is what for? If you don't laugh, then things are going to be really bad and you're going to be angry and you're going to be hostile. And if you start laughing, then, you know, you release all the anger.
Bottom line is that you have to purposefully take some action to get out of what you're in to get to another place.
Yeah.
And that takes a change in thinking to be willing to take that action.
Yeah.
And that's what you did.
Yeah, and kids in school, if they're being bullied, find some friends to stand up for them.
Right.
You know, get yourself out of that bad situation. Put yourself in a better situation. And,
you know,
and,
go on.
No, it's the same for adults. You know, find new friends.
You know, the Satanic Temple is now helping bully kids in school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's great. I think that
they're atheists,
anybody,
you know,
anybody who can help kids not be bullied is an awesome thing to me. And I
absolutely
post stories like that all the time on Facebook.
We got about a minute and a half left, so
okay.
I know. I mean, I want to do another show with you.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this. I could probably do it for another half hour, hour. There's just so much to talk about.
Yeah. Well, my book is free if you have a Kindle and Amazon Prime or Kindle Unlimited. Or the Kindle is like $7, I think. I mean, the Kindle.
The Kindle price, it says $5.99 on here.
Oh, $5.99, okay.
I was just looking at it. The regular price is $14.99.
Yeah, that's for the paperback.
Right, which I'm going to get.
It's a pretty big book. It's about 400 pages.
Thank you for being a guest.
Well, thank you for having me.
And yourself open to everybody. We'll be back here again next week, same time, same place, Monday, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. That's it. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Stan. Stan.
Okay.